Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets.
All right, let's keep this rolling. I'm Ravi Shankar from Drunken Boat, and I'll be here in another incarnation in a little while as a reader, but now I have an MC's persona. And it's my pleasure to introduce a couple of readers who were published in the last issue of Drunken Boat. They were winners of the inaugural, or finalists in the inaugural Pan Literary Awards contest. And first reader is going to be Deborah Poe. She has worked as an environmental activist in Austin, a hostel clerk, bartender in Paris, a waitress in Taos, engineering assistant in Oregon Steel Mill in Portland, editor and international program manager in Seattle, and an educator in Washington State and New York. She's working on publishing her first collection of poetry, Our Parenthetical Ontology, and on a forthcoming book entitled Elements. Her poems were nominated for a Pushcart Prize and have appeared in journals such as Drunken Boat, Anemone Sidecar, Sugar Mule, Snow Monkey, and in the anthology Fingernails Across the Chalkboard, Poetry and Prose on HIV/AIDS from the Black Diaspora. And she will be followed by Terry Wittick, who is the author of Carnal World, Fools and Crows, and Robert Lowell in Life Studies, Revising the Self. She teaches at Stetson University in DeLand, Florida, where she holds the Art and Melissa Sullivan Chair in Creative Writing. So let's welcome Deb to the stage.
Like Amy King, I have microphone issues, and I'm not going to do a psychoanalysis of what that's about. But I want you all to do me a big favor, because I think my dear friend Soham Patel is on the phone in Colorado, and I just want you to humor me. Yes? I want you to sing in whatever tone you want, either so or Soham, please. And I'm going to count to three. One, two, three. So, thank you. This first poem was written for an ex-lover who's from Atlanta, which is apropos, I think. Cobalt Blue Chuchoteur. My cobalt blue chuchoteur, this is how. Or how I see you from the inside out. Two discussions. One, rained asphalt waking, that between my dreams and your reason, and the staggering rain which stammers. Cerulean hands bold at the neck, braver still at the back, fingers the blue jean small. The architecture of air is invisible fragments, silicon or binary circuits untangling their way through the broken. You could be a blue room. You could spread out, place your things. I could place things ringing inside you. Linger is an ease through whispers, wooden floors, indigo floorboards, cobalt blue cream. My blue chuchoteur, this is how I loved you, from the let go inside out. Nitrogen, one. Some remarkable organisms during chemical activity receive sugar from sources, absorb free nitrogen, and add elements to form something new. This is called fixation. His great-grandfather planted clover in a field and harvested his Louisiana soil for unlimited supplies of sky, raising also a crop of fixation. Three, a tornado begins as a supercell. Wind drives it into the storm and starts to swirl. His dreams, like these swirls, form funnels. His father, a tornado from which he backs away. The funnel spins faster and faster. Low pressure sucks in the air, just like he gasps himself awake. Four. The chemistry of tornadoes itself is not racialized, he thinks, nor is the story of storms. Five. But if her name had been Beverly Hills rather than Katrina, we would have seen the atmospheric changes of 1,000 planes going in, he thinks as he twice blinks, rolls over, and climbs to the edge. Boron, or splinter. There's two lines from Soham's poem in this, and I'll, I don't know, raise my hand in exclamation or something. When you run over the river from school, you are the height of tall branches. Splinter that, agree on nothing. Those elegant conjectures, whalebone and corset, a stable covalent bond. Listen, the poem enjoys the sparrow. Further, our windows are sprung. There is much to do here in the open backyard, a desire to rip grass up from its roots, not for weeding, but Heidegger's destruction. And Spanos, man, you are the height of tall branches. You make a decision sound. You, women, a run on from the river of school, fragment, agree on nothing. The day you fell in love with the wren, breathlessly the polyaspirant perspectives waited the scope of wind gust retreat. Silicon. Most people have heard of silicon breasts. Silicon occurs in animal tissues, but not everyone has heard of silicon man. False choices are like a scale. At parties and in his spare time, the gold bars of success are weighed pontifications at home with an entire planet, the other oats, wheat, and ash. Wheat will grow in sheltered conditions without silicon, but which would you rather be, a good person or a good writer? Shoulder the absurd imbalances. Stocks are unable. You should only answer if you stand straight at attention and reinforce binary assumptions to stand up in a breeze and parasites destroy, or how to think positively about artificiality, hair, feathers, and nails. That's the first time I've read that one. Thanks. Two more. Nick of the Woods. You are, as always, something to read. You're a burning arrow in the rain. You're an ambush from the engine's perspective. Peaceful obligation never stops ticking, bomb, bomb, an adverb creeping in detestable woods. You could tell the truth. You could tell you are the advancing Shawnee, the novel one, surrounded yet entirely alone. Tell grandfather's Cherokee grandmother or his wife's Choctaw grandma. Tell yourself there are friends religiously similar and wide. But let's get strung up in the laws of settlements. It will make us feel better. It will be like the half comma the poet sighs as line break. O authority, neither horse, nor cow, nor dog. You will not break, not will I, nor will I, the uproar and collision produced by every gust. Last one, and I have to take a second to think about this. This is called Two-Stepping to Dolly Parton's Jolene. The last time I read this, I knocked over a podium and stood on top of it to read it. So you can just imagine. And there's no podiums here. I can't knock over the speaker. Planning to go to that bar again. Tonight, as I'm going to see my man, I took care like never before. I sat down in the shower. I pulled the razor against, and slowly, the hair, the stark white skin below permissive curly, the hair slightly darker gave behind a dark green curtain against white, skintimate, sentiment, sensitive foam, awaking. With a scented sage demise, the loofah gloves 2x2 led to what is between, towards a second visit to that bar. Twice, no, I assure you that is not what I intend. Back to the neon refraction, wanting to ask exactly just how close your mouth was to mine, but listening to, you could have your choice of men, Jolene. With the careful articulation of legs lotioned, yes, even a small amount on the thighs, wondering, no, not thinking you would go here, although it is interesting to think. If I don't look good in the neon, light smoked and drowning, it isn't because I dance too close. It's for my wanting, the mouthful of exactly how. Thank you. And next, Terry Wittick.
I'm going to answer a question that I'm sure you have never asked yourself. Why necessity spits into her tunic? To ward off what's next, the ancient surmise. But when the reins, her insignia, slide across one palm, when foam flecks back from the bit and an apple bough appears in her other hand, then what speeds destiny's wheel on the cart also feeds the bloom that feeds the apple, that feeds the horse, that is necessity out of time. 2. Bare necessity sleeps sheetless. Clothed, her tunic resembles a tree with twin branches. She pretends to be Daphne, chased into it, or an everyday dryad. But no one pursues necessity. Their eyes slide away from her, the way her eyes slide away from the gods. 3. Her tunic's key stamp borders have softened over time into a pattern of waves. These edge everything, as in our world. In the rough weave of her tunic, then, a drop of spit is the ocean's outpost. 4. In the classic American version of this, Emerson identifies necessity as the clear round eye of God because someone once spit in his woods and now a madman lives near it. 5. Two men spit into their hands. They seal the deal. Women, necessity is usually a woman, spit into cloth, an act which becomes public when a mother rubs her child's face with a little spit, as if to say, I am the ocean, you are the froth of. 6. Once women spent their days under spit curls, held in place by double-pronged pins, these hairlines eased into the cloudy fringes of the cocktail hour, and even children were bottle-fed. Later tunics bore the tear-shaped marks, lactation, letdown, the usual vigorous spit up. While we mime necessity, our offspring, recalling the gods, aim for invention. 7. Spit, then, not only transports influenza, but also the virus of love. In the big screen version of this, the seahoyce Aphrodite, like a sweet-smelling hanky. 8, which suggests the wine dark sea is also the spit warm sea. Necessity steps into this as if into her tunic. Today she's playing naiad. Joining her, we meet cooler nerves and act deeply intoxicating, especially at night. 9, rain again. Etymologists say necessity is what's sacrificed last. Entomologists breed love bugs to X out mosquitoes who die willingly on altars of flesh. The summer weather brings out both and they ignore each other. The letters between our authorities then amount to less than a drop of spit. 10. But necessity cares only that when she looks away, things soften, touch her tunic with a finger, and find spots dark and warm as your mouth. So hush, as you sleep, another outrider will find its way to a raveling shoreline where it will be welcomed like the tributary of a dream river. One more. See you tomorrow night. In dreams, we travel incognito through border towns that seem familiar. Did we live here? We don't know, though guards with flashlights and Detroit hats and badges assure us ours are similar. In dreams, we travel incognito but accompanied. I shoulder sorrow like a purse. You jingle tag ends of desire. Will these be useful? We don't know. A voice laments in tremulo. We've wasted bread. We've wasted song and pleasure. In dreams, we travel incognito and don't avoid absurd tableau. We temporize in all vernaculars. What do we promise? We don't know. When the world pinks, dream roads touch and go. As we do, fellow artificers. In dreams, we travel incognito. Could we have stayed here? We don't know.
If you're feeling antsy, you should know that intermission is coming after this next set. I'm Elizabeth Stark. I'm the editor-in-chief of Fringe Magazine. Fringe Magazine, the noun that verbs your world, is a bi-monthly online literary journal dedicated to publishing and promoting literature that is political in content or experimental in form. In each issue, we feature a single artist per genre and welcome submissions on a rolling basis. Recently, we celebrated our first birthday with a feminism-themed issue, now live on our website, www.fringemagazine.org. And now a little bit about our two readers. Leanne Couch lives in Tennessee and is the managing editor of the Sewanee Review. Her poems have appeared in the Western Humanities Review, Shenandoah, 32 Poems, Blackbird, Carolina Quarterly, and other journals. Her chapbook, Green and Helpless, will be published by Finishing Line Press this spring. Her book, Houses Fly Away, won the Zone 3 Press First Book Award and will be published in the fall. Ravi Shankar, founding editor of the International Journal of the Arts, Drunken Boat, and the poet in residence at Central Connecticut State, has published a book of poems, Instrumentality, from Cherry Grove, named a finalist for the 2005 Connecticut Book Awards. He has appeared as a commentator on NPR, written poems, reviews, and essays for such publications as The Paris Review, Fulcrum, and Poets and Writers, and has read his work in many places, including the Asia Society and the National Arts Club. Along with Reb Livingston, he is the co-author of a collaborative chapbook, Wanton Textiles, from No-Tail Books, which I should also mention received honorable mention in Sundress Best of the Net anthology. And with Tina Chang and Nathalie Handel, he is currently editing an anthology of contemporary Arab and Asian poetry due out with W.W. Norton and Company in spring 2008. Please welcome Leanne Couch.
Hello. I want to thank Fringe for having me here and for publishing longer poems, which is kind of hard to find places to do that. I'm not reading any longer poems tonight. I'm going to read three short ones. The first one's called The Indwelling. The baby I thought I wanted, the baby that I got, the baby like a vacant motel room in Detroit, the baby gnaws at me with longing to be seen by you, the baby makes my heart a furnace, the baby makes my heart a stone. The baby swallows every word on the tip of my tongue. The baby brings strangers home to ridicule my singing. There's nothing diminutive about this baby, though it can hide for weeks, wailing and gnashing its gums at my neglect. But when the baby plays the carillon, I walk into the cold street in my gown and bare feet. That's how lovely the baby's playing is. We all have our babies to bear, to accept, to stand up to endure, to manage, to tolerate, to turn from and walk away, to take responsibility for, to convey from apropos to overdue, from sadness to flight, to mark us as their own, to carry. And in return, our babies bear fruit as well as grudges, bear the brunt and burden of the self we so scrupulously scavenge and compose and think will hold up. Our babies grin and bear it. No one else will know us like they do, having held us in their little arms well before we were ever born. And this one's called Beast. I have good friends and a family only slightly perforated. I eat 3, maybe 4 square meals a day. Still, the bird in my mouth I long for. Not a scissor-tailed swift or jay with perfect coiffure, but a little leaf-round one, a warbler or sparrow, a confection through the glass, to run my tongue along its unmarrowed bones up under the chest of feathers. I keep my teeth clean, floss nightly. My wife and I are tender. I have a dog who wants to please with tiny blind animals dug from the neighbor's yard. Still, the bird in my mouth,
the heart bumping the soft body, a tricycle lurching, a gravel road. We're never alone with these thousand Jonas. They sing, the squirrels and house cats too, the wet vole at my feet, even the dog, they sing to me. You are there, there, and there's nothing we think to do about it. We poke around the grass, the sun warms our skins, we make more of ourselves, we eat, don't get eaten, sleep. It's enough for a life, to taste the shape of that, enough, to mouth its escape and take one more breath as it struggles, wings against my teeth. I only take what's given, what I can get, and I get lonely in this body, lost in trees and air. To open my lips slowly, pass my tongue through its cage. I promise to let this pretty thing go. And this last one is a short one, and it's so short that the epigraph for it is actually longer than the poem. And it's called Astronaut, and it's for this photographer named Arturo Patton, who I wish was more well known. But the title is Astronaut. The epigraph is from a guy named Elias Canetti, who's an Italian philosopher. I never thought. Okay, here's the epigraph. The building is waiting for them. It exists for their sake, and so long as it is there, they will be able to meet in the same manner. The space is theirs, even during the ebb, and it's in its emptiness, it reminds them of the flood. And here's the poem. The world could explode and Rome wouldn't know. It's built on air. The fields could turn over like an old mattress, I don't care. Made of salty water and craving spaces to be beautiful, as the rock's skin, breathing, the river never ending, it's not enough that hills fall into each other like fingers. We scale this vacant building that waits for us to begin. The heart is a moon, and I'm breaking in. Thank you.
All right. You'll notice that the bravado of the MC is now transformed into the vulnerability of the performer. But right after me is intermission. So, and I should also mention, actually, tomorrow evening, same place, same time, there's going to be a small press book reading. So if you're interested, you come by tomorrow. I'm going to start off by reading. I feel like I still need to pimp the book a little bit. So I'll read one poem from that. You know, there'll be copies on that little square table eventually, I guess. This is a posthumous poem. I wrote it after I died. It's called How the Search Ended. Before the bus flattened me, I was searching for a scent, never to be remembered until it was smelled again. My fault, not the driver's. I had stopped to stare at a girl undressing in her window. I was too far to smell her. Earlier, I had visited a palm reader, not to trace my lifeline, merely to discover where to buy an oversized neon hand. On the way home, my head jangled with a premise. Life is either more or less serious than I imagine it to be. And then came the bus. All right, I'll read just three newer poems. This first poem is called Hitchhiker. Obliquely lashed by the north wind, which doesn't exist on the skin, like a mule I trudge through piss pots and crumbling crematoriums, sans passport, lewd as a turbine, unnoticed by the dark men with dogs, flailed grain for a bed, headlights for a lamplight. Whatever I wanted, I stole. The moment a cashier rings up the purchase, the perfect time to palm and pocket. Overhead, the sky weighed a trillion tons, deformed topographical maps into letter form. How exactly does milk of magnesium taste? I've never had it so good as when I confused a cactus for a circus and joined acrobats in dismount. Even though it was pointed out to me later, I remained on the parquet. Hardly. I'm no cantaloupe shuddering in stalls, brain-skinned, shipped by multinationals. I've never wanted for a cul-de-sac or a man of war. Had I loaves for feet, I'd eat myself. Next poem is a cento, and many of you might be familiar with the form. It's Latin for patchwork, of course, and so it's a collage of lines, none of which are my own. I've just reorganized them, and the sources here, I won't list them all, but they're a number of classics, classic television sitcoms, including The A-Team, Sanford and Son, Cheers, Family Ties, Miami Vice, Happy Days. The full list, I can tell you. It's a prose poem. It's forthcoming in Sentence magazine. It's called Composite a Cento. You rang? Are you out of your orbit? I will not talk to you while I have a TV. I'm still recuperating from your last plan. Why don't you just stick an apple in my mouth and barbecue me? Well, it's a bit disturbing to see the team's love doctor hit the ground and cry, medic. What a revolting development. I could put your face in some dough and make me some gorilla cookies. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. Just once, I'd like someone to call me sir without adding you're making a scene. Can you explain the valet parking in the driveway, the flashing vacancy sign in front of the house, the billboard on Route 41? How come we overcame and nobody told me? When she threw that toupee out the window, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. If the guys at work saw me walk in with that, they'd think I turned into an English fruit, gayer than a French horn, a naked fat guy with a bell and a bucket. Hold it, pussycat, I'm on a roll. Stop ventilating. Eat your salad before it goes cold. Responsibility isn't a sickness, it's an art. Did anyone ever tell you you have the voice of a songbird slowly drowning in tar? Hey, I'm not the dreamer, I'm the dreamy. People in stucco houses shouldn't throw quiche. I'll jump on you and stomp a mud hole and then stomp it dry. Do bears bear, do bees bee? The ability to witness two men stand toe-to-toe in the spirit of sportsmanship and pummel each other into insensibility is what separates us from the animals. Who needs TV? We got days of our lives right here. And I'll just finish with a prose poem called String Solo. Is it a sound, a thrush gasp or throaty whimper? You keep wrapped in wax paper for midwinter nights, two hands and a vowel for company. Do long four fragments sing long enough to tilt wheel on axles, spill? Slip-strapped, tippled glade, lace and fretwork, slow bloom of shoulder blade, clasps to unclasp, lamplight on hair sheen, orchids blooming at the wrists, gullies to swim in, the hour elongated, shivery, a smell to carry off on the thumb, peaty and overripe but disappeared too soon, turned muzzy. Jutting into the hour like craving for marmalade, how thickened past touched the pastiche. An urgent inclement burst of syrupy weather that drenches the doer in doing. A mellifluous jagged syntax that when recalled will not be real, not even close. Will any ecstatic dust remain like cardamom between the fingers? Camarado, all I know is the cello in imagination makes music less sweet than hearing its body vibrate before us, clenched between knees, flayed by a bow, cradled at the base of the neck. Thank you.
Okay, so as promised, it's intermission, but before I let you off the hook, I forgot to mention a few things. Like, there's tons of books and shit right here on this white cube. Buy it. So see the editors. Why am I leaning over here? Dan Bowles, a fool. Dan Bowles' chapbook is free. He'll tell you about it later. Okay. So yeah, buy that stuff. And the other thing is there's a great reading here tomorrow. It's going to be Black Ocean books, Pilot books, No-Tell books, and Octopus books, so come back tomorrow at the same time. So take about 5 or 10, be noisy, and then we'll get started, and we'll have Elisa Gabbard and Matthias Valina up first.